It is Monday, July 20th. The news cycle is moving faster than the institutions meant to manage it, so here is the midday update. We are looking at where the cracks are actually showing. The conflict in the Middle East has entered a dangerous new phase. 17 U.S. service members have been killed and 430 wounded since February 28th. The U.S. has been conducting retaliatory strikes for 9 consecutive nights, but the military is hitting a wall. We are running low on munitions, and the Pentagon has stopped regular briefings since May. That lack of transparency about an active, high-cost war is a hell of a way to keep the public on your side. The situation is getting worse on the energy front. Iranian strikes have targeted infrastructure in Kuwait and Bahrain, and they are threatening to block the Strait of Hormuz. That is a global artery for oil transit. If that flow stops, prices spike, and the cost of living in the U.S. goes up immediately. It creates a brutal feedback loop. The war you are fighting abroad drives the inflation that is actively killing you at the ballot box. Meanwhile, back in D.C., the House is paralyzed. Speaker Mike Johnson has a one-week window before the August recess and a majority of only 2 votes. He is trying to push the Save America Act by attaching it to unrelated funding bills. That plan is dead on arrival in the Senate, which requires 60 votes and has 0 Democratic support for these partisan maneuvers. Republicans are essentially betting that they can force these political wins while also funding the government. If they fail, they are looking at a shutdown right before the midterms, which is a shitty way to campaign. A New York Times investigation found that the Department of Justice has been misusing a specific statute meant to protect federal officers. They have used it in over 400 cases against protesters, but nearly half of those cases collapsed because evidence showed the officers were actually the ones initiating physical contact. When the justice system becomes a political hammer, it stops being a justice system. It just becomes a liability. Across the Atlantic, the United Kingdom is navigating its own political turbulence under Prime Minister Keir Starmer. He is inheriting a stagnant economy and a high cost of living. He also has to figure out how to work with a U.S. administration that has shown a clear preference for the far right in British politics. Good luck with that. On the domestic front, the ground is shifting in ways that are hard to track. Public schools are closing at a rate 35% higher than 4 years ago. We are looking at 4 million fewer students by 2331, driven by a shrinking youth population, the end of pandemic funding, and the rise of private vouchers. We are building a future where public infrastructure is just going to fade away, and we are doing it in the middle of an information ecosystem that is being gamed by AI. Candidates are now using answer engine optimization to train chatbots to feed voters favorable, often inaccurate, data. It takes about 12 minutes to manipulate these results. There is a darker thread running through all of this. The defense establishment is currently focused on continuity of government protocols. These are classified plans to keep the state running in the event of a biological attack. The problem is that these plans are designed to save the state, not the people. If a pathogen is released, the government retreats to pre-designated, secure sites, while the public is left to deal with the inevitable social collapse. When the government hides the truth about things like airborne transmission or military casualties to avoid panic, they are not protecting the country. They are just fueling the distrust that makes the country impossible to govern. We are seeing a complete loss of operational depth, whether it is a supply of missiles, the integrity of a school district, or the basic trust between a population and its leadership. When you stop being able to replenish your resources or tell the truth about where you stand, you aren't just exhausted. You're vulnerable to the kind of systemic shock that doesn't just hurt, it breaks the whole thing. That kind of systemic fatigue isn't limited to the battlefield. It is showing up in the digital tools we rely on every single day. The AI market is hitting a wall. High-end proprietary models are losing their grip, while cheaper, open-source alternatives from companies like Moonshot, specifically their Kimi K3 model, are proving they can handle complex coding tasks just as well as the industry titans. This shift is hitting the semiconductor industry hard, with indices seeing a 10% pullback as investors realize that massive hardware spending might not yield the returns they once assumed. OpenAI is facing a combination of declining credibility, stalled product launches, and high-profile staff exits. The company is currently burning through massive amounts of capital to fund compute costs, leaving them vulnerable to a price war against well-funded rivals. If they cannot turn their $500 billion valuation into actual profit, they are looking at a serious restructuring or a forced acquisition by an enterprise-focused firm. Here is the thing about this supposed diversification. Investors are currently pouring money into utilities, real estate, and industrial sectors, labeling them as safe bets. But these sectors are now entirely correlated with AI infrastructure demand. The market is not actually broadening. It is just concentrating all of its risk around a single, fragile factor, the insatiable hunger for compute. This commoditization isn't just happening on Wall Street. It is tearing through the modern office, too. Companies are using AI to unlock new capabilities, like custom reporting interfaces, but these gains are not showing up as margin growth. Instead, they are being used to demand more output for the same pay. Employees are being caught in a systemic squeeze. High performers using AI to increase their output 5 to 10 times over are breaking traditional salary structures, while average performers are under immense pressure to keep up. We are seeing a complete collapse of the barrier between work and life, as AI enables continuous, around-the-clock output. The result is a surge in burnout and a total breakdown of the traditional employer-employee bond. There is a broader, darker story here about how we govern ourselves. We are moving away from the liberal nation-state, which relies on messy, human deliberation, toward what some are calling an artificial state. This is a system where private corporations govern through data-driven quantification. Complex human issues are being reduced to actionable data, and democratic engagement is being replaced by algorithmic management. This did not happen overnight. It started with scientific polling in the 1930s, which allowed political campaigns to stop doing the hard work of precinct organizing. It accelerated in the 90s, when the internet was sold to us as a tool for freedom. Instead, it consolidated power among tech elites who prioritize efficiency over anything else. When local boards or universities prioritize corporate partnerships over public discourse, people lose their agency. They lose the ability to influence their own neighborhoods. If you cannot stop a massive data center from being built in your backyard, or if your campus policy is decided by an algorithm, your faith in representative government evaporates. The paradox is that the very systems used to manage us are starting to trigger a tech lash. Students and local communities are pushing back because data-driven control cannot satisfy the human need for genuine, face-to-face participation. Look, we can keep pretending that the current economic model is sustainable. We can keep telling ourselves that if we just hold on, the silver tsunami of housing will finally arrive, even though data shows baby boomers are choosing to stay put, holding onto 28% of the country's large homes and creating an artificial bottleneck. But the reality is that the scripts we were handed about how the economy works, how the AI revolution would play out, and how democracy functions are failing. The market is not rewarding the companies that follow the old rules. It is rewarding those that can survive a race to the bottom. If we want to restore any sense of agency, we have to stop obsessing over efficiency and start showing up in the same room to actually talk to each other again. It is messy, it is slow, and it is inefficient. That is exactly why we need it. But even when the tech is commoditized and the systems are failing, the smartest players are still finding ways to get an edge. It comes down to how you build your team. Spain won the European Championship by prioritizing collective tactical systems over individual star power. Gulfstream Park is shifting its racing schedule to Mondays with a new, lower takeout betting menu. Across these fields, the message is the same. Stop chasing the short-term win and build a structural advantage instead. Here is the thing about Spain. They succeeded because they invested in youth development and coaching systems for years. They did not build a team around one singular, flashy athlete. They built a unit where every player serves a specific role. Scouts are now ignoring the highlights and hunting for players like Manu Kone, pronounced Kone, or Ibrahim Embe, pronounced Baye, because they offer maturity and tactical utility. Football is changing. It is no longer just 90 minutes of athleticism. It is now a game of managing artificial, commercial breaks that disrupt the flow of play. Gulfstream Park is doing something similar with their scheduling. They are moving major betting events to Mondays to avoid competing with big weekend circuits like Saratoga. They are also compressing the takeout on wagers to 15%. This is a direct attempt to manufacture liquidity on a day that is usually quiet. It is a smart move. They are treating Monday as a strategic opportunity, rather than a secondary day to be endured. They are betting that if you build a better mathematical environment, the players will show up. This shift toward systems is showing up in professional management, too. When you move into a director role, you have to stop managing through your own personality. New managers often make the mistake of hiring people who think and act like they do. That is a trap. It creates an in-group of people who mirror your style, while alienating anyone who works differently. You have to move from being a hands-on coach to an architect of team-wide systems. If you don't document your norms, your employees are just guessing what success looks like. That is a massive tax on your productivity. We are seeing a push for this kind of structural thinking in content creation as well. Instead of manual drafting, organizations are moving toward AI-native distribution systems. They are using AI agents to act as an editorial council that grades drafts against a set standard. The goal is to turn employees into a decentralized marketing network. It is a hell of a trade-off. You lose total control of the message, but you gain a distribution channel that is difficult for a competitor to replicate. The counterargument to all of this is the current obsession with real-time metrics. We are tracking everything from our sleep scores to our social media engagement. It is a disaster. It shifts your attention away from the work itself and toward a proxy of that work. You end up in a loop of anxiety, trying to game the algorithm instead of building something durable. The best performers know when to stop looking at the dashboard. You should use metrics to learn the fundamentals, sure, but then you have to discard them. You need to abandon the tracking and lose yourself in the execution. This is the common thread. Whether you are building a team, a betting menu, or a content strategy, you have to stop treating your goals as a series of short-term wins. You need to build a machine that works even when you aren't staring at it. If you are constantly checking the score, you aren't playing the game. You are just watching it. That is a shitty way to run a business or a life. Building a team requires a clear head, which is hard to maintain when you are constantly fighting your own biology. Here is why your brain is working against you. Pain is not a direct reflection of physical damage. It is a complex warning system constructed by the brain based on internal and external data. Recent research highlights that pain involves the limbic system, meaning social isolation and anxiety can amplify the signal, while social support and routine can dampen it. The takeaway here is that pain is a biopsychosocial phenomenon, not just a physiological one. It is a hell of a shift in perspective. We have spent decades treating pain like a broken pipe that just needs a plumber to fix the leak. But if your brain is the one deciding to sound the alarm, you cannot just medicate the location of the pain and expect it to go away. The placebo effect isn't just all in your head either. It's an active neurobiological input. When you expect relief, your body actually cascades the chemistry to make it happen. It turns out, we are much better at self-regulating than we give ourselves credit for. Bacteria are also doing their own version of high-level communication. They use a process called quorum sensing, the ability to release chemical signals that allow them to count how many of their own kind are present. Once they hit a critical mass, they synchronize their behavior to launch attacks or build resilient biofilms. It turns out that viruses and human gut cells are listening in on these conversations, too. Which honestly makes the idea of a discrete human feel a bit outdated. We aren't just housing a microbiome. We are in a constant cross-domain dialogue with it. If we can figure out how to block these chemical signals, we could theoretically stop harmful bacteria from attacking without using broad-spectrum antibiotics. We might be moving toward a future where medicine is less about killing everything in sight and more about managing an information network. Speaking of networks, your afternoon energy crash is not a lack of willpower. It is a sign of metabolic mismanagement. It usually comes down to three things: unstable blood sugar, disrupted circadian rhythms, and chronic stress. When your blood sugar drops, your body forces a response using cortisol and adrenaline just to keep you upright. That isn't a sustainable way to run a human being. It's the biological equivalent of running your car on the fumes in the tank because you forgot to fill up. Eventually, the check engine light stops being a suggestion and starts being a breakdown. If you are relying on caffeine to get through the day, you are just borrowing energy you haven't earned yet. The fix isn't more stimulants. It is morning light, balanced meals, and actually finding a way to calm your nervous system. Finally, there is the matter of creatine. It is a primary energy currency for cells, but most people only think of it as a tool for bodybuilders. Women naturally have 70 to 80% lower stores than men, and they struggle to get enough through diet alone. Some argue that the standard monohydrate form has a lower absorption rate than newer iterations, leading to unnecessary bloating. That leaves people taking huge doses just to get a fraction of the benefit. There is a shift toward more bioavailable forms, like creatine HCl, pronounced HCL, which allows for much smaller, more efficient doses. If you are dealing with brain fog or recovery issues, this isn't just about gym gains. It is about fixing a systemic deficit that affects your brain and your bone density. All of this points to the same thing. Whether we are talking about pain, bacteria, or metabolic energy, our bodies are not simple input-output machines. They are sensitive, adaptive networks that respond to the environment we create for them. We spend a lot of time looking for a single pill to fix a single problem, but the real leverage seems to be in the boring, day-to-day stuff. It is in the quality of your sleep, the balance of your meals, and the signals you send to your own brain. It is less about fixing the machine and more about managing the conversation between all the parts. And for those of you trying to keep track of the rest of the noise, here is the short version of what else is hitting the wires. A few other things worth knowing today. The investment-grade bond market is currently stuck in a cycle of indigestion. High issuance volume is clashing with steady inflows, meaning the market is healthy but sluggish. FIFA cleared $15 billion for the last World Cup, beating their goal by $4 billion. That extra cash keeps Gianni Infantino, pronounced Johnny Infantino, firmly in power, no matter what happens off the pitch. People who grew up with nothing often struggle to actually spend their money once they make it. The fear of losing it all keeps them in a permanent state of hoarding, which is a shitty way to live when you have actually succeeded. The FDA just walked back a lettuce recall linked to a parasite scare. It turns out a false positive cost national retailers a fortune in wasted inventory, reminding us that our supply chains are as fragile as a head of iceberg. A deep dive into the Iliad suggests that reading can actually serve as a tool for processing grief. It turns out that getting lost in a book is the cheapest therapy available. We are currently living in a gerontocracy where age, wealth, and power are locked in a death grip. Because the older generation refuses to let go of the wheel, social progress is moving at the speed of a glacier. Software developers are moving toward mathematical proof for code instead of traditional testing. It turns out that checking every possible path is the only way to actually prove a program is bug-free. After the earthquake in 62 AD, the people of Pompeii pivoted to urban farming to survive. They turned ruined buildings into high-yield food production zones because, honestly, you have to eat even when the world is ending. If you are planning on retiring soon, build a cash buffer for up to 24 months of expenses. It stops you from panic selling your stocks when the market inevitably takes a dive. Founders who tie their entire identity to their business usually crash when the company hits a wall. Tying your self-worth to a spreadsheet is a recipe for a total psychological breakdown. Local media outlets are finally realizing that trust is their only real asset. They are trying to pivot from just churning out content to actually building a business that values the people reading it. The Trump administration's shift to broad, unilateral tariffs effectively killed the post-World War II obsession with global trade efficiency. We are officially in a protectionist era that values domestic manufacturing over the lowest possible price point. Endurance sports are being used as a way to rewrite personal narratives. It is hard to hold onto a negative story about yourself when you are 20 miles into a run and just trying to survive. That is the state of play for now. Get back to work and try to keep your head on straight.